Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We start today with the ongoing legal battles over admissions at Harvard. They've gone all the way to the Supreme Court and back. But what about life on campus, where being a student can be plenty hard on its own, especially if you're a student of color? Elise Martin-Smith is a rising junior and is the political action chair of the Harvard Black Student Association, joins us on the line. Elise, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And listen, as we start this conversation, for full disclosure, I just want to say I have a graduate degree from Harvard. I was not a legacy admission, but glad to be joining you in this conversation. It's a lot for a student, Elise. How are you?
Thank you for asking that. And that's a question that I do not get a lot. It's been a lot of action thinking about how student groups are going to organize regarding the decision. So even though it's summertime, we are very busy.
So are you hanging in? Was it a hard way to finish out the school year with academics and everything else going on too?
I would say that so much of the Harvard experience is really outside of the classroom, getting involved in the community. That's my favorite part, but it is taxing emotionally for sure.
So, and I want to note, we're getting some background noise. You're at a cafe in Washington where you're spending the summer and you made some time to join us from there because this was so important to you. Why is this moment so important to you, Elise?
Yes, this moment is essential because this case has been going on since 2014. And now that we finally have the decision, it's more important now than ever to act on it. We really need to use the momentum of this moment to target not only within the school, so that's targeting different barriers to education within the admissions process, which include legacy admissions, as well as different tips that you might get for sports or AP courses, but also looking what can we do in the communities that we don't even know that we are not reaching yet when it comes to uplifting them into quality higher education experiences.
So we've got two legal moments going on here, Elise. One is the Supreme Court move to overrule affirmative action in Harvard admissions, in admissions. The other is the move now to sue Harvard University over legacy admissions. And we'll be speaking with lawyers for civil rights about that a little bit later. The Supreme Court move was anticipated, right? For months, people were having discussions anticipating that this was likely to happen. What kinds of conversations, when you were on campus at Harvard, were you having with fellow students from all kinds of backgrounds about what that decision could mean for the future? What were you hearing? You know, what were students emphasizing kind of across the board?
One of the surprising, beautiful things about this case was that we really united across racial bounds, which is something that doesn't always happen on campus. I think people are very happy to find affinity spaces, which is so why it's so important to have diversity on campus. But we were able to have conversations and find much more unity than people would like to show, especially when it comes to the Asian Students Association and the Black Students Association. We worked hand in hand to create discussions, invite guests to talk about it. Even over the summer, we've been having many different dialogues with different people throughout the community to talk about affirmative action. And so there's much more unity than we're giving credit for.
We're speaking with rising junior Elise Martin-Smith, who goes to Harvard University and is the political action chair of the Harvard Black Student Association. In listening to you there, Elise, you sound motivated. You sound hopeful. You sound inspired by that.
Absolutely. I think that we have to be. I think what really also gets me is looking at movements past, because this is not just an isolated incident or attack on affirmative action. We also know that diversity is being targeted in so many other ways in terms of employment, in terms of all these other schools, although contained by Harvard and UNC right now. Other schools are also having to look at their admissions practices. So it's so much bigger than just us. And so I think it's important that we're activated about this.
So Elise, we do know that there are students who feel strongly that it was a good thing to get rid of affirmative action in admissions. We know there will be students who both our legacy admission admits who will be concerned about the lawsuit and who will feel it's a bad idea to get rid of legacy admissions. How do you think about dialogue there, engagement there, navigating those viewpoints as a student on the campus?
Right. I mean, I'm the first to say that the admissions process is far from perfect. And I think that we need to be centering, especially first-generation, low-income students, as well as students of color in our dialogue. And so I think that this is an opportunity to redesign the admissions process and have, I'm really an advocate to have these people have a seat at the table when it comes to redesigning admissions. But it's important that we listen to all student voices in terms of what admissions is going to look like.
You're one of the leaders of a prominent student organization on campus, the Harvard Black Student Association. What have you heard from the university itself?
And I think this is the most disappointing aspect of this. We have had, there was an incident of swatting on our campus that was targeted towards Black students. And in response, the Black Students Association and the Black community leaders throughout the college had created a list of demands that we had hoped the administration would act upon, which include transparency with the Harvard University Police Department guidelines, as well as mental health support specifically for Black students. And the demands were agreed to, but have not been fulfilled, although it is months since that incident. And so I think that there's a lot of distrust between the Black community on campus and the administration. And so far, we have not heard from admin as to what they're going to do next. And so we have been taking our matters into our own hands by not only creating some guidelines of what we want to see the administration do, but also finding ways that we can increase community outreach on our own, independent from what administration does. So that includes having tutoring initiatives or reaching out into our actual communities ourselves.
And so, Elise, just for our listeners, swatting is when somebody makes a false call to emergency response law enforcement that draws people to, armed, usually to someone's residence under false pretenses, and it can be dangerous and deeply upsetting. So you're on summer break, you're in D.C., you're in an internship. It's an exciting rite of passage for a student. What's next for you when you get back to campus in the fall?
I think that it's going to be hitting the ground running. We have a lot of planning meetings that have been going on weekly with the Affirmative Action Coalition, which is a coalition of student organizations, not only on Harvard's campus, but also UNC, also Yale, some of the other Ivy League schools. And so I'm hoping that people will be ready to get started as soon as we get back on campus.
Elise
and also relax.
And also, oh, that, if there's time. Elise Martin-Smith, rising junior and political action chair of the Harvard Black Student Association. Good luck on all of it. And thanks for giving us some time today.
Thank you so much. Have a great one.
So in the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling on affirmative action, Harvard is being sued again. And this time, a number of local organizations say that legacy admissions are discriminatory. Lawyers for Civil Rights represents the plaintiffs. And Yvonne Espinoza-Medrigal joins us now. Yvonne, welcome back to Radio Boston.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. And just such an inspiring segment following the amazing work of a current student who is out there making change, making waves. And that's what we're here to support at Lawyers for Civil Rights. We're here to support the future generations by creating a level playing field.
So I'm glad that you heard that conversation with Elise. And it is kind of the context here for our conversation with you about the suit, Yvonne. You're filing on behalf of the Chica Project, the African Community Economic Development of New England, Greater Boston Latino Network. Why file this suit?
It is incredibly important because we need to create a level playing field. The Supreme Court gave us an exceedingly narrow path forward for considering race as part of a larger mix, a holistic mix of factors that college admissions officers can take into account. But the Supreme Court is making clear that that consideration of race needs to be highly tailored, even more narrow than before. And so what the Supreme Court is saying is that it wants to move strongly away from preferences, and it's laying the groundwork for that. Well, there is nothing that speaks louder in terms of preferences than what is experienced by students affiliated with donors and with alum legacies,
family members who attended prior to that student.
That's right. That's right. And that legacy connection, that donor connection, accounts for approximately one third of the class at Harvard. And so many people think it is Black and Brown students stealing their opportunity, taking up seats. But that is not the truth. If we want to talk about preferences, if we want to talk about fairness, we have to level the playing field. And that means acknowledging that one third of the seats go to people who have a family or donor affiliation to Harvard.
So
if we get rid of those preferences, more kids of color can get in.
A number of follow-up questions for you there, Yvonne. First, you know, court watchers, many expected the court to make this decision. On affirmative action, had you had this plan on place to take this next step for a while, or was there something specific in the language of the decision as it came down from the Supreme Court on affirmative action that spurred this next suit going after legacy admissions at Harvard University?
The court is speaking loud and clear about the elimination of preferences. And although the court came short of outright banning racial considerations. And let's be clear, it didn't ban racial considerations. We're dealing with a court that can speak very clearly about overturning precedent, as we are all familiar with in the reproductive health space. So this is not overturning of precedent, but it is narrowing of precedent. So it is concerning. It's concerning for us that the future looks more tenuous, that the future looks like racial considerations will matter less and less. And in that landscape, it is not fair to continue pretending like one third of the seats at Harvard are available to all kids. They're not. And people should ask themselves, when was the last time someone from my high school went to Harvard? When was the last time someone from my zip code went to Harvard? And if the answer to that is no, don't look at the Black and Brown kids and say, they're taking up my seat. You need to look at the legacy and donor admissions. That's what we need to get rid of to create more opportunity.
So we're speaking with Yvonne Espinoza-Madrigal from Lawyers for Civil Rights, who has filed this lawsuit against legacy admissions at Harvard University. A couple more questions for you. Reporting in the Globe this week noted that athletic admissions might actually be a more disproportionately skewed process towards white and privileged students at institutions like Harvard, citing both disproportionate lack of qualifications among admitted athletes and the fact that the varsity sports that institutions like Harvard offer disproportionately favor white and higher income athletes. Given the intent of the suit, as you've just laid it out, are you targeting the right thing?
Well, we are absolutely targeting the right thing. It is one third of the seats, again, that go to the legacy and donor affiliated students. Now, we are going after what is clearly discriminatory. The legacy and donor preferences exclude and harm students of color. That is a civil rights violation. That is a discrimination issue. That's what's clearly discriminatory. That's why we're moving in this direction. And at this time, because what's clearly discriminatory and what's clearly the most voluminous is the legacy and donor piece, that's what we're challenging.
So a couple of other questions for you. You had filed an amicus brief in support of Harvard's case on affirmative action. Now you're actually suing Harvard University. Did Harvard know you were going to do this? What have you heard from the university? Obviously, there's a legal, you know, back and forth going on here. But what have you heard, and did the university know?
We have not heard from the university, and we did not... We did not discuss this lawsuit with the university in advance. As you pointed out, we had filed an amicus on behalf of students of color at Harvard. So we are in the business of protecting students like the incredibly bright, talented, and accomplished student who was in the segment before me. We need to create opportunity for the students. Our loyalty is to students of color. It is to create opportunities for the best and brightest to move forward and to create a level playing field for them, Harvard has asserted a number of institutional interests, like preserving donor relations, as part of the reason why donor and legacy admissions continue. This is not viable for us. We believe this is completely untenable. You cannot have an institutional interest in accumulating more wealth. As many social media observers have noted, Harvard is richer than God. And so the idea that you need to have legacy and donor admissions, which discriminate and exclude students of color, that you need to have that because of institutional wealth building purposes, that is disconnected from the education component, that is disconnected from creating room for bright and highly qualified students who are being excluded so that someone with a check can take their place.
I'm sure you've heard the counter argument that Harvard actually uses a lot of that money to provide particularly large financial aid packages to low-income students. Either why doesn't that or does that have a mitigating claim on the arguments that you're making?
Not at all mitigating. We have seen many institutions such as Amherst, such as Johns Hopkins, MIT, right next door to Harvard, does not use legacy and donor preferences in its admission process. It is a level and equal playing field. And those universities have done perfectly fine in terms of building relationships with alums, in terms of attracting resources for all of its programs, including programs that fund diversity, equity, inclusion, and first generation initiatives. And so this idea that we must have exclusionary and discriminatory admissions by favoring legacy and donors, kids, that we must have that to be able to fund the rest is neither here nor there. It misses the point. Again, this goes to an institutional interest in continuing to accumulate wealth, and it is disconnected from the civil rights implications of continuing these practices. And that's what we're pointing to Amherst and MIT, among other elite institutions that have eradicated this practice.
Ivan Espinoza-Madrigal is Executive Director of Lawyers for Civil Rights, which is representing the plaintiffs in this lawsuit challenging legacy admissions at Harvard. Ivan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.